Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Eric Rogan. I represent Evan Dominick in his action against Christian Brothers Automotive Corporation. My client is seeking to reverse and remand the award of summary judgment to Christian Brothers Automotive Corporation at the district court level. My argument today is going to more or less work on two points. One point being much smaller and integral to the greater, larger point. My client has two avenues, as best I can tell, to reverse and remand. The first one is this court completely departing from precedent and reinterpreting really the marginal lines of how Section 1981 is applied under federal law.
Oh, you're saying that's your first path to victory?
That's my first path.
And it's from precedent?
It is a very novel
argument.
That's bold.
It
is a very novel argument.
I thought I misheard
it. Oh, please go ahead.
No, I thought I misheard it. I'm this excited.
That's all right. That's okay.
Yeah, tell us.
The argument hinges on really federal courts' interpretations of the word white. Section 1981 specifically affords protections to all persons within the jurisdiction of the United States. As enjoyed by white citizens, specifically using the term white. In the 1860s, white could not have been interpreted just to be a skin color. There is no way in this universe that that could be possible. If you look at the legislative history that is cited in the St. Francis College opinion, the opinion itself cites evidence that religion must have been part of the nexus of what was white in 1860s United States.
Well, I wonder. I mean, I've got the case right here.
Sure.
It's an interesting case. I had not read this case before. It was written by Justice White. I don't know if that's significant. That's a dumb joke. I thought the case, so I was interested in this argument that you're making about what does it mean to be a right as is enjoyed by white citizens. That's an interesting way to phrase a federal civil rights statute. I mean, it's coming out of the 18. I mean, it seems to be the same legislative history as the Civil Rights Act of 1860, whatever that was, 66.
I would agree.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I read the decision as drawing a distinction between religion. If you say, well, I've been discriminated against because of my religion, on the one hand, and then whatever else we're drawing distinction. I hesitate to say race. It's not just race, ethnic, ancestral characteristics. But anyway, tell me why you think that religion kind of gets folded into.
Well, certainly. I mean, in the 1860s, in the United States, and I know this isn't a novel argument to make, but all people with white or pale skin did not have the same opportunities and were not treated similarly under federal law.
Yeah, Germans.
Yeah, I mean, and specifically in the St. Francis College opinion, you have a senator with the last name Schallebarger, who I'm willing to gamble was of German descent, wanting to make sure that Section 1981 afforded protections to people from Ohio of German descent. Which to me speaks not just of ancestry and national origin, but what is a difference there that otherwise could differentiate between people of the same skin tone? And that has to be religion.
They were Lutheran?
Lutheran, because they might have been Catholic. The way I interpret the difference in 1860s United States between similarly situated white people is Protestants versus non-Protestants. In this time, in the 1860s, you had Irish people toiling for whiskey and pennies building the Transcontinental Railroad right next to Chinese immigrants, and that was not the same for English Protestants. I think to interpret this law as St. Francis College does, and really the vast majority of federal case law does not interpret Section 1981 under the prism that I'm inviting this court
Well, are you saying, are you disagreeing with the way that the St. Francis case reads Section 1981?
No, not necessarily, because what the St. Francis case does is it acknowledges that at a minimum, it protects against racial discrimination. It doesn't say that it doesn't protect against religious discrimination or that religion is not part of the nexus. It stops short of doing that. Subsequent case law, again, relies on St. Francis College. It relies on Runyon for the precedent that Section 1981 does not afford any protections for religious discrimination.
I gotta tell you, I tend to agree with you, having just recently read St. Francis, that it is not limiting the protections of 1981 to skin tone. I think you're right about that. The additional step you're making to religion, I think, is a step beyond what the case is saying. Let me ask you this in terms of this case. This case was about an Arab professor at St. Francis College. And the court doesn't say that he has a claim under 1981. It remands for, I guess, further fact-finding or
certainly
something of that nature. But if he was bringing a claim as a Muslim and not as an Arab, mm-hmm. do you not think that would that not be different with respect to 1981? If you were saying, well, look, you discriminate against me because I'm a Muslim. He wasn't saying that. He was saying, I think he was saying, I'm because of my Arab descent. And it might have been considered Caucasian, according to the court, at the time that he brought the lawsuit, but not as of the time of the statute. So wouldn't that be different if he said, you're discriminating against me because I'm a Muslim?
I don't think so.
Why not?
Because I think the term, the problem with, I wouldn't just say St. Francis College or subsequent federal court holdings, is the problem with the wording in the statute. Again, we're going back to White, and if we're arguing...
Well, okay, let me complicate it then further. Suppose he was an Englishman, maybe naturalized American, but because I think it says in terms of citizens...
White citizens.
That opens up a whole can of worms after
all persons,
recent decisions.
Right? So,
but anyway, but so let's say he's a naturalized American, but he's an Englishman, converted to Islam. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, you're discriminating against me because I converted to Islam. Now, what result?
So we're saying we have a naturalized...
He's English.
His last name is white, for lack of a better
Shropshire,
term.
Some English name. His last name is Churchill. Let's have order. And he's converted to Islam. Okay, so can he bring a claim?
I still think so.
Really?
I do, because I don't think that Section 1981, nowhere in the wording of the statute does it limit it to just race or natural origin. I think that's a court creation. Not by this court. I'm not, but by how it's been interpreted.
Thank you for not accusing us of that. So I guess my point, maybe you see my point. Let's bring it to Jewish, because
certainly
that's what this case is
yep.
about. So it seems, I'd like to figure out where the parties agree. It seems that the parties agree that one, if one can claim discrimination on the basis of Jewish ancestry or ethnicity, you agree with that, obviously.
I do.
I think the other side agrees with that. We'll find out if the other side agrees with that. But do you agree there can be a distinction between a person who is of Jewish ethnicity and a person who is of the Jewish faith?
I mean, as a non-Jewish person, I'm going to tread very lightly here.
You can tread however you want, but it's just a question. I'm not Jewish either. I have to ask the question.
But most Jewish people that I know, most Jewish people that I interact with, most Jewish clients that I've had, uh-huh. present and past, do not see a distinction between an ethnic and a religious Jew. I have no statistics.
Okay, well, then let's complicate it further. I mean,
okay.
You've got a Catholic whose last name is, Churchill.
And Grogan.
Grogan. Well, I don't know what Grogan is. But anyway, whose last name is Churchill. And he decides, I'm going to become a Jew because mm-hmm. I no longer believe in what the Catholics say, but I do believe in what the Jews say. Okay, so he's a convert,
yeah.
right? He's a
convert. Is there a claim? Well,
is there a claim?
There is a case that I cited. And give me just a second to find it in my original brief. I believe it's Singer versus the Denver School District. And that was a federal case in Colorado. I'm looking for the exact quote, but the court found essentially that I believe the gentleman was Hispanic. He was a Hispanic teacher who had converted to Judaism. And the court in that case held, well, I think this is the district court. So that district court found that that gentleman still had a claim under 1981 because he identified himself as Jewish.
Wow.
Okay. So, I mean, that's
a district court case.
That's a district court. And what I think it gets to the greater point of my client's argument is that I think some courts, and I have a dicta case too out of the Northern District of Texas that says it's Kirshner. It says that discrimination against a Jewish person based on their religion and not their ethnicity is actionable under Section 1981, but it's pure dicta. So I think there are some cases or some federal courts that at least look at it this way, but I have no meaningful or useful precedent to cite for you here today because I do think it is a novel to my understanding. I don't think anybody's made this argument under Section 1981 before. And I really don't understand why, because the term white is so subjective and you have to do a historical analysis. Like when you look at the way that the St. Francis College opinion is drafted, I give that court an A+ for effort because they went into the legislative history. They were trying to parse out who was white, who was not white, but they didn't go the extra step of saying, well, there must be something here that's more than just skin color. Otherwise, why are we talking about Germans or Scandinavians or Irish people? If you look at them all right next to each other, they look white to me. So why are we parsing out who is white and who is not? If it's not culture, it's religion, and religion is a part of culture. And that's where my client's argument is that religion has to be a part of this nexus. Otherwise, why is the court wasting its time parsing out who is white and who is not?
Well, there are other civil rights statutes that specifically say religion.
Correct,
absolutely. Is that not a problem for your argument?
No, because to the best of my knowledge, and I will stand here and tell you I am not a civil rights litigator. The only real civil rights statute I've ever engaged meaningfully is this one, and it uses the term white. I'm aware of other civil rights statutes that do differentiate between race, religion, sex, gender, all of those different markers. But when you read the actual statute through the lens of those that drafted it, there has to be more than skin color here.
So in your view, let's talk about the evidence here. Is there any, what if the record showed without dispute that Christian Brothers had franchised to people who were ethnically Jewish, mm-hmm. but who had become Christian, converted?
To my knowledge, that's consistent with Christian Brothers' business practices.
You don't deny that that's the fact.
I don't deny that whatsoever. I think the fact that you have to be a Christian to buy into that franchise, because this is not an employee-employer relationship, it's franchisor-franchisee, I think runs afoul of a reasonable interpretation of Section 1981.
Go ahead.
Counsel, before you sit down, I want to talk about the ministerial exception.
Absolutely.
So I take it from your brief that you think this is basically, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but the sense I got is you think this is a frivolous assertion. And I'm trying to figure out what exactly it is about Christian Brothers that makes the ministerial exception not apply. You point out that it sells, auto parts. You point out that it's for profit. You point out that it's not a church, doesn't do religious services. Is it all of these things, one of these things?
I think it's a combination of all of them. From my readings of, I think it's Our Lady Guadalupe and the Hosanna Tabor, to my understanding, none of those cases address Section 1981. They're Title VII, employer-employee.
Of course, the ministerial exception applies more generally and is a threshold question that we have to confront at the beginning. And I'm trying to figure out why it wouldn't apply. Would imagine a for-profit kosher certification organization. Mm-hmm. Would they get the benefit of the ministerial exception against generally applicable provisions of Title 42?
I don't believe so. And I think part of the Guadalupe opinion is that the job must require vital religious duties.
Well, okay. I mean, I would argue a kosher certification is
correct. Yeah, the kosher certification, you probably have a rabbi there saying what's okay and what's not.
Right? So then maybe, because if it requires vital religious duties, then maybe it is entitled to the ministerial exception.
So it's not the for-profit. It's the fact that there's no Christian minister or pastor.
It's the fact that it's just not a church. Understand what they're trying to do.
Well, neither is a kosher certification group, right? I'm imagining a for-profit organization that goes around and inspects kitchens and makes determinations and labeling decisions about what is and is not kosher.
And I think you've identified what, in my opinion, would be a great use of that ministerial exception, because that is, at least in my opinion, as I stand here today, a vital religious duty.
You're just saying this is a different factual situation.
Correct. But I do think that the ministerial exception would apply in that instance.
Okay.
I believe
thank
I'm
you.
Out
you
of
have,
time.
You have time for okay. rebuttal, though, Mr. Griffin. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Oldham.
Good morning. May it please the court. I want to start just with the point that Your Honor's talked about the difference between ethnic Jewish people and religious Jewish people, and just give the court a record site. We cited it in our brief as well. But ROA 429 is the testimony from Christian Brothers' Brad Fink, where he testified to the fact that there are at least two ethnically Jewish people who've converted to Christianity. And I think that underscores that there is a difference between that. But I want to step back and talk about this case, at least initially. This Section 1981 case threatens the heart of who Christian Brothers is as a company. For over 40 years, its identity and its mission have publicly centered on the Christian faith and on spreading the message of Jesus Christ to its guests and its communities. And it's fundamental to that identity and to that mission and the culture that it has, that it have the right to have only fellow Christian believers as the owners of its franchise stores in each of its locations. And the record in this case is remarkably clear that Christian Brothers has consistently applied its religious-based franchisee policy to limit ownership of its franchises to Christian believers. But it's also clear that in doing so, Christian Brothers has awarded franchises to people of many different races and ethnicities, as I said, including at least two ethnically Jewish people who are practicing and professing Christians. I'll generally address three points, but obviously respond to any questions. First, Section 1981 prohibits only race discrimination, and it does not reach religious-based preferences in private contracting. Second, the evidence here is conclusive that Christian Brothers' decision on Mr. Dominic was based solely on the fact that he's not a Christian. And third, Dominic's claim that religious-based decisions now count as race discrimination, perhaps only for Jewish people, is contrary to the law, and it would transform Section 1981 into a de facto ban on religious exercise, which would entirely undermine the ability for companies like Christian Brothers and other companies like it to maintain a distinct faith-based culture, identity, brand, and mission. And so Judge Tipton was therefore correct to dismiss this case. I'll start with the law. We talked about the St. Francis case. I think even before St. Francis College case came about, Runyon had already decided that Section 1981 does not extend to religion. St. Francis makes that very clear by saying towards the end of the opinion that you have to prove something more than solely based on religion. And that's very clear from that case. This court in the Sibley decision has referenced the fact that Section 1981 does not reach religious preferences. That's also clear in the McCoy case that Sibley cited. My friend on the other side admitted, there's many, many cases on that point, so I won't belabor it, but suffice it to say that the law is very clear that Section 1981, textually and by the cases that apply it, does not reach religious-based preferences in private contracting?
No doubt there are more 1981 cases than St. Francis College. It's just the one that I read most recently.
Yes.
So I'm going to pretend like it's the only decision that exists. Race, you say race discrimination. I agree with you that that's what Runyon says.
Correct.
Does St. Francis sort of nuance the idea of what race means?
Yes.
And it talks about things like ancestry or ethnic characteristics.
I certainly concede that, and I'm using race to refer generally to what St. Francis makes clear is covered, which is ethnicity and ancestry. And that, and further, you know, St. Francis College says that Jewish people as an ethnic group are protected by Section 1981 on racial grounds.
You have to concede.
Absolutely,
yeah. But it says it in the
agreed, and our brief conceded that, and I think that we've never contested that or quarrel. I have no quarrel with that. But what is very clear is there's a difference between ethnicity, ancestry, and race on the one hand, and religion on the other. It would, as Your Honor pointed out, it would sort of render superfluous parts of multiple federal statutes to say these are the same thing. And so there is a difference, and even St. Francis College recognizes that.
What if so that would mean that if a business refused to offer franchises to Italians, that's not okay under 1981.
Italians. Oh,
Italian Americans.
If that was their basis for it, and the evidence showed that was the reason for doing it.
We don't like Italians. We don't like the way they run our franchises.
I watched
The Sopranos one time. Don't like them. This is hypothetical, of course. I'm Italian, but half Italian. But that would not be okay under 1981, right?
I'm not aware of Italians being a religion, so I'm...
Well, not religion, right.
Correct, right. Yes. I think that's correct, Your Honor. That's what St. Francis College says. And
What would happen if a business said, I'm not going to let Zionists franchise. I don't want to franchise to Zionists.
Well, I don't want to underestimate what all may be, you know, loaded within the word Zionist.
Yeah, it's kind of a loaded term, I hear.
Right, and so I think that might be a different case if it was...
I mean, who knows what that means, right?
Correct. And that's why I'm hesitating, Your Honor. Yeah. I don't myself know for sure what I'm agreeing to, if I agree that would be okay. I think the Italians is a lot clearer because I'm not aware of any religion that is just known.
Well, I mean, it could be a religious thing, right? Or it could be something different.
Well, and I think that's where the record in this case makes it so clear, because if you imagine an Italian American and who's Catholic, and so then there's a distinction, you know, there's a distinction between their Italian ethnicity and their Catholic faith, and you can imagine a factual scenario where, you know, what the employer, or not the employer, but in this case the franchisor said cast some doubt or showed, you know, had some evidence of pretext, right? That they said it was based on Catholicism, but in fact
they just don't like Italians.
They may not like Italians. But what's so clear about this record is Christian Brothers has had this franchisee policy for over 40 years, mm-hmm. and it's uncontested that they have never deviated from awarding a franchise only to Christians. They have awarded franchises to a variety of different ethnicities, including, as I've mentioned a couple times, ethnic Jews. And there's no evidence whatsoever of pretext. And in fact, the evidence is also even uncontroverted that at the time the decision maker, Brad Fink, who's the more senior person involved in this, he didn't know the ethnicity of Mr. Dominic. So when you don't know the ethnicity of the person that you're making a decision as to, it can't possibly be based on that. And so I think what this record is so clear and why summary judgment was appropriate is we don't have any of the gray areas that we might get into if a franchisor is saying it's Catholicism, but then there's also other evidence that it's Italian American or other, you know, invalid bases. So
you're familiar with Messianic Jews?
I am, from the record in this case. There's a reference to it in the deposition.
Is there? Okay. So that would be, I mean, I'm told that would be a Jewish person who believes, it becomes Christian, but still adheres to Jewish religious practices, something like that.
From the deposition of Mr. Dominic in this case, counsel described Messianic Jewish people as exactly that, someone who is ethnically Jewish but converts to Christianity. And Mr. Dominic said he was not familiar with anyone. I believe that's what the deposition testimony said.
Not familiar with anybody that...
He said he was familiar with the term, but wasn't familiar with anyone who fit that fact pattern. But of course, in our record at ROA 429, we have evidence of that in this case. Mm-hmm. There's also testimony in the deposition that Mr. Dominick's father was actually not ethnically Jewish, but converted to Jewish. So that's the reverse of it. But again, underscores that you have differences.
The record shows that his father was not ethnically Jewish, but was a convert.
Correct. That converted to Judaism later. Yes, that's correct.
So what about his mother?
I believe the mother was both ethnically and religiously Jewish.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I think all of this underscores, it just underscores that there is a difference between race and ethnicity, and that you can convert. I think Mr. Dominick acknowledged that even in his deposition, that you can convert. And so I think that just undermines the distinction or the attempt to say that these are one and the same, and that a religious-based preference has to be race discrimination or ethnicity discrimination. You know, race, again, I'm using in a broader sense, consistent with St. Francis College, that these are not the same thing. And again, if the court were to indulge that presumption, it would turn Section 1981 into a de facto ban on religious liberty, which there's absolutely no indication from the text of the statute or the history of the statute that that's what it was meant to be. And I do want to just emphasize, too, because we've been talking a lot about the Jewish faith, mm-hmm. but what's important for Christian Brothers and their franchisee policy is simply whether or not a person is a Christian. That's what's key for their, you know, for them and their policy of having franchise store owners of like faith is whether or not somebody's a Christian. And so if a non-Christian person's religion, it doesn't really matter if that person's not a Christian. So we've talked a lot about the Jewish faith, but this case really should have nothing to do with the Jewish faith as opposed to any other non-Christian faith. Mm-hmm. The key for Christian Brothers was when Mr. Dominick was asked, "Are you a man of faith?" quote unquote, and he responded, "I am, I'm Jewish," that he identified as not a Christian. And it was after that that Christian Brothers made the decision.
Do franchisees have to subscribe to a statement of faith?
I don't believe there's a statement of faith, but there is open discussion about it. They're asked the question in this case, in the first couple of conversations, and there's a later stage in the 8-step process where there's like a discovery day where somebody would go and have longer, you know, 1 or 2 day interactions with more executive senior level people, and there would be, and I believe it's during the discovery day where there would be discussion of sharing your faith or about like how you would interact with people about
that. Is it understood that sharing faith, whether orally or maybe through literature, is part of the franchise, part of being a franchisee?
That's what the
evidence. This is relevant to the ministerial exception, by the way.
Correct. In this case, the evidence showed that in over 40 years, they had never deviated from a consistent, very deliberate practice to only allow
Christian
believers.
I was asking about sort of the practice that is expected of franchisees. Are they expected to, you know, have some literature about Christianity in the store, something like that?
I don't know about actual requirements. What the record does show is that it is very commonplace, and that's the whole point of the franchise owners in each store is – you know, there's examples of some of them would offer Bibles at their store, and
but that's not a requirement.
I don't believe it's a requirement.
You don't have to put up signs or there's no like, you know, you put the Ten Commandments or you have to have a certain, you know, thing with tracts or you have to orally share with customers or there's no statement of actual faith. It's more of just we want to make sure that you're a Christian, not that you're in fact practicing Christianity inside the store.
My understanding is it is an expectation and a very common mission. I hesitate to say it's a requirement because I can't in my mind right now locate where it would be a requirement. Yeah. I believe it is a core part of the mission. The evidence shows that the franchise owners, some of them would have Bible studies. The evidence shows more about examples than it does requirements, things like that. So that some
I was asking because of the mystery.
I understand, and I'm trying to go as far as I can. Hesitate a little bit about saying it's a requirement, but.
Right.
It is, I think the way that Christian Brothers views its franchisees in each of their location is not altogether different from a minister. And when you think about it from that perspective,
on that point, you know, in the ministerial exception cases, you do have to sort of say, well, what employees are you talking about and what is their role? And we want to sort of analogize the role to a minister or something like that. So that's part of the analysis in a ministerial exception case. But here, what exactly, you're not focusing on any particular employee, the guy up front or the whatever. You're talking about the entire franchise. Is that right?
We're talking about the franchisee, the individual that is the owner, or really it's usually through a company, right? An individual would make a company.
So in that sense, he would be the minister and the ministerial
executive? He would be the minister because this doesn't apply to all employees. Christian Brothers as an organization complies with all laws as it relates to employees in terms of not discriminating on the basis of any of the variety of factors. It treats franchise owners as very different because they are very different. At each one of their franchise locations, their job is to instill set the tone, essentially.
It's more of an expectation to set a business culture that's consistent with Christian Brothers' goals.
Absolutely, because Christian Brothers' core mission, it says on its website that it is applying strong biblical principles to the auto repair industry. But then it has way more beyond that than just auto repairs, right? Another part of its core mission is to spread the message of Christianity to its guests, employees, and community members. Another one is to foster a culture where its employees can all work in a place where they can live out their spiritual lives at work. So the record shows, ROA 4:26 through 28 talks in particular about how Christian Brothers' mission itself is at each of its stores to carry out a very religious mission, both in its auto repairs and well outside of its auto repairs. And it views the franchisees, that is the store owners, as the ones that are carrying that mission out at each of the locations. Again, that's ROA 425 through 428.
So in a minister, you've read the ministerial exception cases, like it said, we'd have a Catholic school and the focus would be on the geography teacher or something. And what is a geography teacher doing? Is a geography teacher leading students in prayer? Is, you know, that this or what is the geography teacher teaching? So if I'm going to put that paradigm on this case, I'm looking at the individual who has the franchise.
That's correct.
Okay.
The individual that has the franchise, as opposed to, say, an employee that's working the front desk. Now, another part of it that's in the record, it shows the franchise, each franchisee, Christian Brothers has a view that that person needs to be in the store. So that person may actually be at the front desk at times, but they have a sort of in the office mentality, quote unquote. And on the ministerial exception, I know I want to address some other issues as well, but I'll jump there because I know some of the questions were there. I do believe that under Hosanna Tabor, it's an affirmative defense, so the court doesn't necessarily have to reach it when it's strictly the ministerial exception, as opposed to larger ecclesiastical abstention type issues. But if the court does decide to do that, I think Your Honor was referencing potentially, I believe it was the Chalet Sabot v. Hebrahom, the Fourth Circuit case, where, it's a kosher program, and in that case, it was not a for-profit disaffiliated from a Jewish entity. But that's the case we cited in our brief, along with the Markle decision, that shows that for a unique company like Christian Brothers, that is very, it has a religious mission at the core of what it does. We think that the ministerial exception has strong analogies, if not is applicable to that. So,
is your point that the fact that it's a for-profit company shouldn't disqualify it?
Absolutely, that's the Hobby Lobby.
You're in front of the right panel for that.
Hobby Lobby makes that clear, and I understand that. And there are other distinctions, as Judge.
I think that's been decided by maybe the United States.
The for-profit.
I could be wrong.
The for-profit nature of it can't be the difference, as we all know from Hobby Lobby. And the fact that it's not religiously affiliated may be a unique application of it, but I don't see any reason to have a distinction because it's not literally tied to a church. That, again, I think almost in some ways invades.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I was just trying to figure out how the paradigm applies to a franchise situation like this. Like,
yes.
It requires some mental gymnastics.
It is, and I think also some of the factors that the Supreme Court has looked at in deciding who's a minister, and the court has focused a little bit less on what it means to be a religious organization, but in terms of what it means to be a minister, some of the factors that the courts have looked at may not map on exactly with a for-profit corporation, like what kind of religious training, for example. But I think that the court has made clear in Hosanna Tabor and also Our Lady Guadalupe is that there's no fixed way of looking at this. You have to adjust the analysis to the facts of each case. Mm-hmm. We've also talked about the freedom of association in our brief as well. And I think that that First Amendment principle also has a lot of play here because a ruling that Section 1981 requires Christian Brothers to have a non-Christian believing head of one of its stores would fundamentally change what its mission, its brand, its identity, and its expressive activity. And so we think that that principle also has a lot of play here. I know I've covered some of the evidence, but I also, this record and how remarkably clear this record is also clear not just that Christian Brothers has this policy, but why it has its policy. I've talked some about that, and, you know, it's in Christian Brothers' very name. Its name is Christian Brothers, which reflects its Christian faith. It's on its website that love your neighbor as yourself is its guiding principle, and specifically referencing Matthew 22:39. And its official mission statement is to glorify God by providing ethical and excellent automotive repair service for our customers. And so just on this section 1981 issue that we think is at the center and the court can affirm simply based on is that the evidence showed, it's uncontroverted, that it has a religious reason for its decision in this case, which is non-discriminatory under section 1981, and it's legitimate. And there's no evidence in this case whatsoever of pretext. And in fact, we think if we had the burden, we'd disprove pretext because it is abundantly clear that the religious franchisee policy is what drove Christian Brothers' decision at the time.
Counsel, very quickly, on your surplusage argument, I take the point that, you know, the word white has to be in contradistinction to other forms of discrimination because otherwise there's a surplusage problem with other civil rights statutes. Title VII says no discrimination because of race, color, national origin, and religion. Is there not a surplusage problem there?
I don't think so, and not certainly in the way that...
On your theory, I should be clear.
On my theory?
Yeah, on your theory that these things all have to be different. Is there not a surplusage problem in Title VII?
I don't believe so, and I don't know if Your Honor has particular words within that you think...
Race, color.
Yeah, race, color, national origin. Like, the entire distinction, the argument we've had here today is that white has to include all of these things, but it can't include religion.
Right.
And so, but then we have four separate provisions, three of which seem to overlap with the entire discussion today.
Well, I think we can put natural origin to the side because I think the Supreme Court in St. Francis College makes clear that national origin is different from race and ethnicity.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, that's the way I read it. Justice Brennan didn't, but, you know.
Correct.
That was just him.
Justice Brennan, you know, concurred to say that he thought that that might be a fine line in some cases, but I think it's clear that in other cases it can be a clear line. And I think the same is also clear about race and color. There might be a lot of cases where that's the same thing, but I think that the fact that there are some cases where they're different and one could have more play than the other means there's not surplusage.
Maybe not. Yeah. All right, anything else?
We'd ask the court to affirm. Thank you.
Mr. Grogan,
Your Honor,
five minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you. I did want to bring up a couple of points just to rebut. The first one specifically on my client's father, Mr. Dominic's father. Yeah. At least according to Jewish law, which is, of course, governed by Jews, if your mother is ethnically Jewish, then you are Jewish.
Okay, that's why I asked about the mother.
Yeah, I don't see an important distinction there. One of the things that – well, the main tenet of my client –
standing. Yes.
The main tenet of my client's argument is that St. Francis, Runyon, all the progeny is wrong. My client, in good faith, believes that Christian Brothers Corporation, Automotive Corporation, didn't know that he was ethnically Jewish when they denied him. You know, I don't think it's controverted that was a religious based decision. But I noticed the ministerial exception is, I would say, being talked about quite a bit in this argument. And I think if Christian Brothers Automotive Corporation was true to the tenets of its own belief system, it would use this opportunity to evangelize. if that is not what Protestants do, I don't know what else they do. Well, actually, being a Protestant, I think that's fairly inaccurate.
So, did you say you concede that they did not know his ethnicity when they denied the franchise?
I don't believe they knew his ethnicity.
They knew his religion. That was it.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. I believe that's the case. And under my client's interpretation of Section 1981, that shouldn't matter.
Yeah, you're accepting, as I hear what you're saying, you're accepting that the distinction here that they're making is a religious distinction.
Correct. Correct.
And so it really doesn't matter about the McDonnell Douglas analysis. I mean, the district court spotted you a prima facie case, said that Mr. Dominick had met that, but there was no pretext. That doesn't matter under your interpretation.
It does not.
In fact, if it's not pretextual, it all the more proves your 1981 claim.
Correct. My client's case is not, well, let me see if I can try to phrase this in a way that makes sense. The district court awarded summary judgment based on precedent and the applicable tests. We don't disagree with that analysis. We believe that the district court was just adhering to precedent as it is virtually everywhere and didn't feel obligated to depart from that. Mm-hmm. But we had to go through there to get here. And my client's pitch to your honors this morning is to depart from that precedent because, again, we don't read Section 1981 to just limit that discrimination on race.
Is your argument keyed to something characteristic about the Jewish faith and ethnicity, or is it have broader application in your view?
I think it has broader application, but I think.
So, can you give me another example?
Well, I want to expound, if I can, about specifically the Jewish implication here, okay. Because I think it's. I think it's kind of the right plaintiff to bring in an action like this because for the most part, and I have no statistics, no evidence, no anything to support this contention, but I would say most ethnic Jews are religious Jews and most religious Jews are ethnic Jews. And of course, I don't know if that's 60%, 80%, 90%. I have no idea. I
mean, there's a Venn diagram.
Absolutely.
We don't
absolutely.
Know how exactly.
But I mean, are all white people Protestants? Or
no.
Are all white people Catholics?
I can
or
tell
all
you.
White people? Yeah, they're so. So, you know, Jews and Jewish people, I think, are uniquely suited to bring this kind of claim because if you're religiously Jewish, chances are you're ethnically Jewish, and vice versa. And again, I don't believe Christian Brothers Automotive Corporation knew my client was ethnically Jewish. Mm-hmm. I really don't believe that. I believe they made their decision based on this religion alone.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. This is a fascinating case, and I appreciate the arguments on both sides. Case is submitted.
Thank you.
And that concludes our oral argument session for this week.